Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. A lot to cover tonight. Let's get right to it. Ben Bernanke. Remember Ben Bernanke? He was the chairman of the Federal Reserve from 2006 to 2014. Now, the Federal Reserve is a big-time bank. That's the best way to describe it in simple terms. But it's the bank that supplies money to the other Federal Reserves that are regional banks, who in turn send money to the banks, regular banks as you and I understand him. Ben Bernanke is the man who helped President Obama, and he must be given credit for this, to get us out of the recession that Wall Street and the bankers put us into starting in 2008. So he's considered a good guy by most, as opposed to a bad guy with regard to the recession. Today, his book hit the stands, went on sale. The book is The Courage to Act, and it's about what happened in 2008. And the interesting thing, and the reason I am sharing with you some comments in Ben Bernanke's book, is because he hits a very important issue head on. He said that corporate executives, the bank presidents themselves, the Wall Street leaders should have gone to jail. Okay? They should have gone to jail. No one's gone to jail. You understand that? No one's gone to jail yet. And then this is 2015. Nobody's gone to jail for everything that happened in the mortgage fiasco. He says they should have gone to jail. And he said, here's what he doesn't understand, and here's what's wrong. Firms, companies, banks, Wall Street, corporations were indicted. But the people who ran them, the presidents, the vice presidents, the chairman of the board, the people who set the policy and the direction, they were not indicted, charged, okay? So the firms walk away, the companies walk away, the banks, they pay a big fine and that's it. But no one ever gets nailed who was the thinking person who set this whole fiasco into place, got it going. As he says, and he's very true, this hits home. He said the illegalities in these situations were done by individuals, and not abstract firms. And he's absolutely correct. You know, corporations are people. They're made up of people. A corporation's this entity on paper that's called a person. Thank you, United States Supreme Court. But all it is a company. You can't put it in jail. But what you can do is you can charge their leaders, their presidents, vice presidents, and put them in jail. Now, to me, this makes sense. I've been saying this. I've said it on my television show 3-4 years ago. I said it on this show. I've written on about it in my newspaper column. I've written about it in my daily blog. If the government had taken the time to indict some of these big guys and put them on trial and send them to jail, the people at the head of Wall Street, at the head of the banks, all this crap that the banks are still pulling today would stop immediately. The reason being, no one wants to go to jail for 10, 20 years. Very simple. These people at the top on Wall Street lead very good lives, and they don't want to give up that life. You know, the private jets, the big trips, the beautiful cars, the beautiful homes, several homes worldwide. Who wants to give this up? And they're going to lose it all if they go to jail. But we never did this because, and I blame the president for this and the attorney general, President Obama's policy, and it had to be policy, was not to indict the heads of of banks, Wall Street, financial institutions. Instead, we will just charge the institutions, and then they dropped the charges, by the way, and made them pay big fines. You remember, it was Attorney General Holder, all right, who said, and when he speaks, as far as I'm concerned, he speaks for the president too, that the banks were too big to fail, and that the banks were too big to prosecute. If you and I went out and stole even a loaf of bread, we're going to do 30 days in jail. These guys who steal billions of dollars, screw up the economy, put us into a recession, almost put the world into a big recession, and what happened to them? Nothing. Not a day in jail. Which now brings me to Putin. I love this guy, the president of Russia. He's got brass testicles. I say this every week, I guess. He's got brass testicles, no question about it. Now, he's in Syria. Let me say this at the beginning. I wrote about this in a newspaper column 2 weeks ago in Conk Life. Russia does not have the military force to go to any kind of major confrontation, major war. The United States spends $60 billion a year on its military. Russia spends only $6 billion. Our Navy is in fair shape. The Russian Navy is in terrible shape. They're still using World War II vessels. They are, if you read about them, the articles all refer to Russian naval vessels as geriatric. There's no competition here. But you gotta give him, he's got brass testicles. He challenges us. He challenges the world. He goes into the Ukraine, all right? And what did the United States do? We sanctioned him. We got the other countries behind us. But he's still in the Ukraine 2 years later, okay? He's now in Syria, and he good guy, boy, went in Syria. What did he do? He gave us 1 hour's notice that his planes were going to be up there and to stay out of the way. All right, and this is a dangerous situation because there's going to be a confrontation accidentally between United States jets and Russian jets. Now, Putin appeared before the United Nations last week, and he gave a talk. If you recall, the heads of all the member nations appeared, or most of them, and they gave a talk, and Putin gave his talk. And he said, and he surprised the world at the time when he spoke before the United Nations Assembly, that Russia had put together a broad coalition, okay, a broad anti-terrorist coalition that was prepared and was going into Syria to get rid of ISIS. And that coalition consisted of Iran. We just entered into an agreement with them on nuclear weapons, or we're in the process of doing it formally. Iraq. They love us in Iraq. They love us over there. Look at the war we brought over there. And Russia. Can you imagine? So what does he do? He's in there. So far, I don't think he's got any help from Iran or Iraq, but Russia's in there. He walks in. He takes over airspace. Now he announces yesterday that he's got some troops coming in there, too. Okay? I don't understand this. This man acts aggressively. He acts aggressively, and he gets away with all this crap. But here's what I want to say about what happened when he made his speech before the U.N., within seconds of his completing his speech before the UN, the main thrust being this new coalition to fight terrorism, the market, the Russian stock market, dropped aggressively, just like that. Within seconds of his concluding his speech, the Russian market dropped. There was no other news that came out that day. It had to be Putin saying, I'm taking my team, I've added people onto my team, and we are going into Syria. His economy's in terrible trouble. They're in trouble in Russia. They're on the edge of bankruptcy, in effect. But the people don't care. I'm going to tell you this, too, right now. The people are thrilled with Putin because they remember the glories of the Soviet Union, and they want to go back to those days. And everyone thinks that Putin is bringing Russia back to those days. So they're bearing up under the sanctions, okay? They're thrilled. They're thrilled that Russia is in Syria. This is Russia of the old days. And it's bringing back the glory days to these people, at least in their minds. Now, staying with Russia for a moment. What Russia has done is declared that all of Syria is now a no-fly zone. It's a no-fly zone. We're up there, stay out of our way. Now, not Lewis says this. NATO's Supreme Allied Commander for Europe, General Philip Breedlove, he said it himself this past week. He says, Russia has a monopoly on Syrian airspace of their own doing, but they're there, they control it, it is a monopoly. Now, this is embarrassing for the United States. because, as I said a few moments ago, it's going to be difficult to avoid conflict between us and Russian jets. But what it boils down to, what is Putin saying? Putin is saying to the world, when he walked into Syria, there's a new sheriff in town. You heard me. There's a new sheriff in town, folks, and I'm the guy, okay? Well, we're also talking about a naval blockade now of Syria. Putin has threatened this. His Navy, his Black Sea Navy, has not yet arrived in Syria, but it's expected in the next 24 hours. And the Russian naval force, whatever it may be, okay, will be used to blockade the Syrian coast. I don't understand all this. Where are we? What are we doing? Sure, we should have a confrontation. You must remember, there comes a time when you must face a bully. And he spits in your eye, you spit in his. He hits you, you hit him back a little harder. Remember John Kennedy with the Cuban crisis? When Khrushchev had those vessels with the missiles on them going to Cuba, he confronted them with the American Navy in the Caribbean. Those vessels were within 200 feet of each other, both ready to shoot at each other. And what happened? Russia blinked, Khrushchev blinked, and turned his vessels around and took the missiles back. We've got to come to that sort of thing. I'm not saying go to war, but you got to stand up to a bully. The other thing that bothers me here, what did Hitler do back in the 1930s? Hitler and Germany. I mean, they went into different countries, two or three countries. They took over these countries. Nobody opposed them. You know, we wanted, as Macmillan said, we peace in our time. Well, no one wanted to go to war, and they let him have. They let him have a piece of this, a piece of this, and a piece of that. And so Hitler kept taking. Why? It's all free. Nobody challenges me, all right? Not a bullet is shot until he went into Poland, and then France stood up to him. And that was the start of World War II. But this reminds me of Hitler in Germany. And I know a lot of people on TV today say, we shouldn't keep comparing people and things to Hitler and Germany in the 1930s. You bet we should, because history repeats itself, and I see a repetition here. All right. I want to talk to you a moment about my column in the newspaper this week. It hits the stands tomorrow, Conk Life. It's called "The Doctors Killed the President." That's an interesting story. The doctors killed the president. I'm talking about President James Garfield. He was president. It's 1881. He'd been president less than 4 months. He and his son, two sons, went to the Washington Railroad Station for a trip to Massachusetts. While he was walking through the station, an unhappy office seeker by the name of Charles Guiteau walked up behind the president and shot him, creased his arm with the first bullet. The second bullet, though, went into his back. Immediately, I don't know where they came from, 12 doctors were taking care of the president as he lay on the floor in the Washington Railroad Station. Now, understand what I am going to say to you. Germs, you know, those things we can't see but can infect the body, dirt. Germs were not considered a threat to good health by American doctors in 1881. They thought it was a joke because they were talking about germs in Europe, but the American doctors said, no way, if we can't see it, it doesn't exist. This is how they were thinking. And so these 12 doctors with dirty fingers, dirty instruments, and the president laying on what can be dirtier than the floor of a railroad station are probing the hole in his back looking for the bullet so they can take it out. They figure they could just pull it out with their fingers. Well, they couldn't find it. The president lived about 2.5 months. It was a combination of errors. First of all, they brought him to the White House. They kept probing his back, not realizing that the bullet went in on the right side. While they were probing, the bullet moved over the left side because some doctor's finger pushed it over. Another doctor with his finger ruptured his liver. I'm laughing, but it's not funny, but it's not. You can't believe this is the way things happened back then. Now, They can't locate the bullet. They don't know where it is, and they feel it must come up. Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone 5 years earlier and was considered America's leading expert on new type machinery to do things. The doctors went to Alexander Graham Bell and says, put together a machine that can discover where the bullet is. We need to know the location of the bullet so we can extract it with our dirty hands and our dirty medical instruments. Alexander Graham Bell put together a metal detector machine. They did not have x-rays in those days. And he tested the machine. He put this thing together rapidly. He tested it on Civil War veterans. The war had ended 15, 16 years earlier. But these veterans were still carrying bullets in their bodies from World War II. And his new machine worked terrific. It identified the location of the bullet immediately. The machine went to the White House, to the president's bedroom. The machine wouldn't work on the president. They tried, and they couldn't understand. The machine didn't work. Not only did it not locate the bullet, it just didn't do anything but create a lot of static. And no one understood why. Well, as it turns out, underneath the president's mattress was a metal spring mattress, okay, a metal spring mattress. We all have springs under our beds under the real mattress. Now, you have to appreciate that metal spring mattresses had just been invented. They weren't being manufactured yet. The person who made it gave one to the president to sleep on. But they did not start selling these metal spring mattresses till 2 years after the president's death. So now we've got on this metal spring mattress underneath the president. He's laying on his regular mattress with the new metal spring job underneath it. And no one realized that the electrical power from this new machine to detect the bullet was being diverted because of the metal springs. So that's why they couldn't find it. Well, as we go on here, the president suffered like hell for 2.5 months. I'm going to tell you this right now. This poor guy, he was septic. He had pus and poison throughout his body. His internal organs were coated with pus, coated with abscesses, his body, inside and out. In 2.5 months, he starved to death. Also, he weighed 220 at the time he was shot. 2.5 months later, he weighed a mere 130 pounds because of the illnesses which the germs had infected his whole body. He could not eat. He couldn't keep food down. He could eat it, but he couldn't keep it down. And the poor guy died 2.5 months later. Now, Charles Guiteau, the man who shot him, goes on trial for murder. Murder of a president of the United States. And what do you think his defense is? I didn't kill the president. The doctors did. And if you think about it, it's quite true. He may have shot the president, but the people who screwed him up with their dirty fingers and their dirty hands, et cetera, were the doctors. And that was his defense. Of course, the jury didn't buy it. They convicted him and they hung him. Well, that's just a little bit of the story that's in the paper tomorrow, Conk Life. Read it if you have the opportunity this week. I believe you will enjoy it. I want to talk about another newspaper, the New York Daily News. Now, the New York Daily News has been out there for like 100 years, maybe longer, in New York City. I will tell you this. The New York Daily News is on its last legs. It is said that it does not have very long to function. It's having economic troubles big time. But they did something. This is their last hurrah. They did a great last hurrah. On October 3rd, 2 days after the Oregon Community College shooting, where 10 people were killed, okay, the New York Daily News said that the United States State Department, and they are the ones who do what I'm going to tell you, should designate the NRA as a terrorist organization. You heard me? The paper thinks that the NRA should be considered a terrorist organization because what they do through their lobbying and their influence and their contributions is prevent the proper legislation to limit these shootings, which have gone crazy in the United States at schools and at colleges. Well, and they said, they had a justification for it besides what I've just said. They said that the paper said the national security faces a greater threat from armed United States citizens than terrorists. National security faces a greater threat from armed U.S. citizens than terrorists. And again, it's because of the NRA's influence. Okay? They are a more immediate threat to the lives of our citizens than foreign terrorists. I want to stay with shootings for a moment. I want to talk about police shootings, like a police shooting update. Something bothers me, and perhaps you have considered it also. We went through a period of a couple of months that's all we were talking about on the national news. That's all we were reading about in the newspapers. That's all we were hearing on the radio. The police shootings. The police shootings. The police killings. The police shootings. All of a sudden, we don't hear about this anymore. But I want you to know, they go on every day yet. There are cases every day where the police officer recently put his knee in somebody's back, ruptured his spleen. Killed him. Nobody knew his spleen was ruptured, because you die if you don't take care of it within a matter of hours. Shootings are going on every day, but the media doesn't publicize them anymore, and it seems like the American public doesn't care. They don't hear about it. They think it went away. They don't care. But it's there, and it's there with the same rapidity that was there before we stopped observing it in and on the media. So I want to give you, and I think this is wrong, because we as a people, I've forgotten sometimes, we as a people are forgetting the terrible thing that's still going on. The police departments really have not been taken in tow yet. So, in 2014, I love numbers, in 2014, last year, there were 1,104 Americans, 1,104, 1,100 Americans killed by police. You know what that comes down to, 1,100 Americans in 1 year? Three people a day, three United citizens a day killed by the police. That is one person every 7.6 hours. Three a day, one citizen every 7.6 hours killed by police. When will we do something about this? This is the gun issue too now, and we've got to take the police in tow. We don't seem to do anything. We don't. We talk a good game. Our politicians in Washington talk a terrific game. But when push comes to shove, nothing gets done. They're in the hullabaloo, and then they go off and worry about something else where they can make a grandiose speech again. Interesting topic. Denmark and sex. How do you like that? Denmark and sex. Denmark's a great country. Terrific country. They've always known to be a people who welcomed all people. They respect each other. There are few millionaires, but their middle class is terrific. Their unemployment rate's between 1% and 2%. It's always there. So people are working. It's almost a full economy, a full working force. And it's like a solid middle class. That is what Denmark is. Years ago, they said, hey, you know, we have this sex problem. We think sex is good. People should enjoy themselves. So at the very lowest levels in school, as kids went to school, they started sex education. And they taught children that sex was good. And not necessary to be married when you have sex. Just enjoy it. So it got to the point where if you were a high school girl and you met this guy and you wanted to have sex and didn't have a place to go, you took the new boyfriend home, introduced him to your parents, and then went to your bedroom and had sex with him. And everyone thought this was kumbaya. It was A-okay. And that's the way the people of Denmark thought. And one of the things that was pushed by them is birth control. Make sure you have protected sex. Excuse me. We don't want you getting pregnant while you're enjoying this. Well, something has happened here. The birth rate is falling off tremendously in Denmark. And now the government is fearing, and hear what I'm going to say. They're very serious about this. The people who are of the age to be grandparents will never have grandchildren, so they will never be grandparents, because people are not having as many babies as they used to, okay? And China had this problem. I talked about this about 2 or 3 years ago. I did a whole TV show on it. China has a population that has more males than females now. It's like the difference is about 14%. And what happens is in both Denmark and China, there is an economic reason for being concerned when your birth rate falls off, because the men in China don't have enough women to marry. So they can't have babies. They can't even have sex in China, most of these guys. Who takes care of the elderly in Denmark now? Who takes care of the elderly in China? Who will take care of the elderly tomorrow in Denmark and China? You know, it's always been the world. The Bible even did this, says this. The young, the old take care of the young when they're little, when they're babies. And when they get older, the young, they take care of those who took care of them, because they're not old, now old. The young take care of the old. It's the reverse. But if you don't have grandchildren, and if you're not having enough children, you're going to have now a great elderly population, more than the middle age and younger. And who's going to take care of these people? The government can't afford to do it all alone. It's expected that the children and the grandchildren are going to help to support the elderly, the grandparents. Well, China's problem was real big. These guys can't even have sex in China. They start going to prostitutes on the Korean border. Government closes their eyes to this, the Chinese government. And here's how it develops. Some of these men now, because they don't have a wife, there's not enough women out there, they pay a prostitute to live with them in China for a whole year and act as their wife, as a wife, doing the housework also and all those sort of things, and sex, okay? And this isn't going to get them any babies, because these prostitutes practice safe sex. Things are so extreme in China, and this is very true. I did a whole TV show again on this. This is so true. There are not enough prostitutes to accommodate these Chinese men. So one prostitute will enter into a relationship with 3 or 4 Chinese men. She will be wife to all 3 or 4 of them for a year. They each have their own special time when she lives with a particular person. Let's go back to Denmark. Denmark is sex liberal. I've told you the story, what's behind this. They now want reproduction. They need babies. They are now teaching in their sex education courses at the beginning. Now, you can and you should enjoy sex, but you also have a responsibility to make babies, get married early, and have children. This is all part of the whole situation. Reproduction has become part of the curriculum. The interesting thing is the government is advertising, and listen to this, do your duty. Do it for Denmark. Don't you love that? Do your duty. Do it for Denmark. Have babies. Now, Nicholas Kristof, who I respect very much, the New York Times column writer, wrote an article recently where he said the birth rate is dropping all over the world. For example, Haiti went from 6 children per family down to 3.1. Bangladesh is down to 2.2. Indonesia, 2.3. Kristof said, we used to worry about the world starving because there will not be enough food to feed this big population. Well, things have reversed. We're having fewer and fewer births. This massive starvation problem may not, will not, he said, be a problem ultimately. Okay. That's the story for this week. That's the show for this week. I think this was quite interesting, some of these things. I wanted to talk to you about human droids. They're a new form of robot that people can have sex with, for real. I'll toss this in on next week's show. I'm glad you joined me tonight. Please come back again next week. Recall that this show is archived on Black Talk Radio and YouTube. It is also linked to my Key West Lou website, so you can hear the show at any time. I wrote a book. I keep telling you, The World Upside Down. If you like the show, you will like the book. If you don't like my show, don't buy the book. The book's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Thank you again for joining me. I look forward to being with you next week.